Thank you very much for coming and being with us here today. I would also like to remind, if anybody feels like donating to the cause of HariMedia.net, broadcasting and forums and supporting what we're doing, you can please do so by sending us donations. If you feel like doing it regularly, that's also fine. Any donations sent in Russia will pay for the Russian, for the server that we actually have HariMedia.net on. And if you know anybody who would like to give a donation, all the information on how to do so is on HariMedia.net. Last week, we spoke about meaning, contrasting it to addictions, and how addictions arise when we have difficulty dealing with meaning. Practically since time immemorial, people have been struggling with finding meaning in their lives. But I have seen, and not only I have seen, but practically everybody has concluded over all over the world, practically all over the universe, since all over time, whenever there has been people who have been thinking and feeling that love is really the only meaning in life. Periodically, in everybody's life, people reach this conclusion again and again, and then due to difficulties, they move away from that conclusion. In other words, we grasp at meaning very strongly when we feel love with others, or feel love with God, or we feel love with nature, or we feel love with ourselves. Let's just examine for a second the lucky person that loves themselves. That very lucky person who loves themselves is a person who can always have love for others. Because having love for oneself means that one always feels that love for others, wherever others are. So by being capable, having that wonderful capacity to love oneself, means that one lives in love. And for one who lives in such love, there is always meaning in life. If you have ever examined it, when two people fall in love, they don't ask questions like, what is the meaning of life? They don't have to struggle. They don't have to tear out their hair searching for meaning. It's right there between them. When a mother has a new child and the mother's looking at the child with great love, the mother never asks, what is the meaning of life? When something fantastic happens to us in whatever way it happens, we don't ask about the meaning of life, because these things in and of themselves have meaning. So I don't think anyone would argue, I don't think there would be any discussion about a statement that love is meaning, which is the title of this broadcast. It's not like this is a complicated and debatable point. We believe it, we understand it, we feel it, we see it, we have experienced it at one point or another and have been convinced of it. However, not everybody can say that we have experienced this love and we have maintained meaning through this love throughout our entire lives at all time. There are situations when that love suffers setbacks. For example, in death. Now, death does not, just by its nature, stop the loving connection. Death does not finish the loving connection between people. If you love somebody, you love somebody. It doesn't matter whether they're living or they're dead. First of all, nobody's dead. Everybody's somewhere else. And second of all, people live on in their memory. People live on in the way in which we feel and have felt and can touch and contact that feeling at any time we wish. So One would ask then, why does death have such a great impact upon us when we lose a loved one? And I would suggest that is because there is more to love, or let's put it this way, love is such a very broad, all-encompassing energy that there is more to it than the feelings or the connections. Now, this would make sense, of course, when you consider that all there is love, that everything in the whole existence is a product of love, of the product of the love of the Supreme, of the Divine, and between our relationship with this Divine and us, it's all a product of love. That makes a lot of sense. Yet there are situations, for example, there are marriages, husband and wives, where they are very much in love. In fact, that love is a pretty constant, a constant in their lives. Yet, they cannot live together. They may not be able to live together because of bad habits on part of one or the other, or an incompatibility as far as finances go, or intellect goes, or a situation beyond their control with their family or whatever. You may see this also in the relationship of parents and children, where sometimes the child will not wish to have connection with the parent because of some psychological reason or trauma that has occurred, yet there is a deep love. If you think about it, great pain cannot be given by one person to another. I mean, besides physical pain, which can always be given. But that intense emotional pain, psychic pain, cannot be given unless there is some love involved, unless there is some attachment involved. Where there's love involved, where there's passion involved, where there's a deep connection involved, only then can that traumatic pain arise. And when there is that traumatic pain, when there is that intense experience, it doesn't mean there's no love. It doesn't mean the love has stopped. It just means we can no longer deal with it in the context it has been up to this point. So separation takes place. Pain takes place. A transformation in one's external existence must take place. Love is complex, and because of its complexity, it is one of the more difficult aspects of our life. Now, sometimes we feel the pain of the loving connections that we have. And this pain makes us start to think, what is the point of life? What is the point of all of this? Love may be there, attachment, connection, intensity may be there. But when it is a very pleasurable thing, nobody's asking about the meaning of life. But when it is a painful thing, everybody's asking, what is the point of life? So we see there are people who are suffering because of a traumatic or intensity within love due to conflict. And there are people who are suffering because they don't experience the love at all. So we basically have two situations where people who have contacted love either by not having it or by having it with trauma, who both question the meaning of life, and those who feel pleasant with love do not question the meaning of life. This analysis or this clarification of love and meaning can give us a very good indication of what is the problem of finding meaning in life. It's not that there is no meaning. It's not that there is no intensity to it. It's that we don't particularly like the situation that we are in, and therefore we compensate for that by saying it's all meaningless. I cannot find meaning in it. We rationalize our lack of pleasure. We rationalize our lack of intense positive connection by declaring as a defense mechanism There is no meaning. I cannot find meaning. And that's the problem. One of the characteristics of the human being is the need to find easy solutions, the desire to find easy ways to deal with difficult things. We try to move to the path of least resistance. Now, that's not a condemnation of us as living beings, but rather it is a confirmation of the fact that we are living energy. If you think about water, electricity, electricity is a good example. Wherever there is a current capacity, in other words, a capacity where current can move, the current will go there. It does not need to be asked. It does not need to be coaxed. If there's a circuit, the current moves. If there's no circuit, it does not move. And it moves very fast. And it moves to the first place first. And if there's extra current available, it moves to the second place. Or if it's divided up, it moves to all places. It instantaneously moves to wherever it can, which means according to whatever is easiest. And the more resistance there is, the less it moves. The sun, if it hits a tree, it doesn't go through. It goes around. That's a not great example, but the example is to mean that energy by nature, the nature of energy, is to flow through the path of least resistance. Now, I'm not talking about when you take a gun and you shoot it at a brick wall. That's different. I'm talking about the flowing energy, that living energy, like electricity, which flows through the path of least resistance. If two people are in love with each other or fall in love with each other, there's very little resistance between the two. The love can just flow. It just flows whenever it wants to. It just flows without difficulty. There's no resistance because they want, each person wants to feel the energy of the other. They thirst for it. Indeed, they draw it out of the person. If I'm speaking to you and you want to hear what I'm saying, you're interested in it, you draw it out of me, it becomes very easy for me to speak. Because energy likes to flow without resistance. It likes to flow rapidly to wherever it's wanted, wherever it's invited. But when there is a resistance, there's some problem, energy will not flow. For example, in that situation where a husband or wife, they separate, they love each other, but they can't for some reason live together. That resistance stops the flow of love, although it's still there within the heart. So naturally, it's not our defect that we move towards the places of pleasurable exchange of love, and we shy away from the places of non-pleasurable exchanges. It's not a defect. It's the nature of energy. It's the nature of love. So we shouldn't think that, oh, here we're having this loving exchange where the love is flowing back and forth without resistance. That is meaning, as everyone will agree. Yet this is the real thing. And this other exchange, which is filled with conflict and filled with difficulty and doesn't flow so much, and which makes me wonder about the meaning of life, this is some kind of illusion. If you're the kind of person who believes in illusion as this grand overriding concept, you can see either of these as illusion. If you're the kind of person who sees truth everywhere, who sees reality everywhere, you can see truth and reality in both of these concepts. Let's examine the difficulty we have in finding meaning when it is connected with a non-pleasurable experience. And let's use the example of two people who are still in love with each other, but cannot be connected to each other due to various external difficulties. Now, the real thing is not the love in this analysis, because the love is there in both situations. The real situation is the lack of pleasure in the conflict situation as compared to the situation without conflict. Now, okay, this may be something which sounds a little bit harsh on us. Because what it really does is that it basically puts us in the situation of people who are very selfish, who are very self-concerned, not interested in anyone else but our own feelings, our own pleasure. But it's not that way, because we get pleasure when those who we love derive pleasure from us. Yet, at the same time, if you consider the situation of somebody who's just full of love and offers love to all without expectation of return, that person has the greatest pleasure, because that person's always living in love. So let's then say, let's conclude like this, just theoretically, that when I love another and it's very pleasurable because they love me, what I'm really loving is me loving them. And when they love me, what it does in essence is authorizes me. It gives me confirmation that yes, my love has value. Now, can you imagine this? Ultimately, it can be one of the main situations of our life is to have it confirmed that our love has value. And we are finding meaning when we ask the question, I'm offering you love. Do you value it? And if they value it, we say, life has meaning. And if we think they don't value it, we think, what is the use of life? I'm sure this resonates well with everybody. We all know it's so. And therefore, it definitely confirms that love is meaning. The illusion in all of this is that my love only has meaning when you value it. This is the actual illusion of this place within which we live. If you think about money, now there's two things in this world that everybody values very much. That's love and money. Think about money, and let's analyze how that becomes valuable, just for a second. What actually gives money value? Some people say because of, in the old days, it was valued in gold, and because gold has value. But why does gold necessarily have more value, let's say, than copper? Because in some circumstances, copper can bring you water, and gold can simply give you a ring. And if you're thirsty, the copper has more value, in that sense, than the ring, because you can't drink the ring. There's no absolute reference that says gold is very valuable, earth is not very valuable. After all, you can grow food in earth. You can't grow food in gold. So the only value in gold is the value somebody gives it who wants to get it from you. Let's say you have 5 bars of gold, but if nobody wants it, it has no value. Even your piece of paper bill, the piece of paper bill that we have, has no value unless somebody gives it value. And if somebody gives it value, it has as much value as gold, whether gold is there or not there. So all that counts when it comes to value is how much I put value on what you have. That's all there is. Now, money we value because it's what we need to maintain our physical bodies or the physical bodies of our family. Therefore, money has a great value, so it tends to dominate our thought process. But a child, for instance, has no concept of money. Therefore, money does not give the child value. For the child, love is the entire currency of transaction between people. But as we grow older, our values transform because we become attracted to, we become attached to, we become absorbed in money. And everybody knows my money only has value in so much as another person values it. My value of it is not important. It's the other person's value that dictates the actual value of this money. I may think my 100 ruble bill or my $100 bill is worth at least 1,000. In my understanding, my $100 bill is worth $1,000. But when you see my $100 bill, you think it's worth $100. When it comes to money, it doesn't matter how much I value my note. It's how much you value my note that has any meaning to money, because money only has meaning in what it can buy. So therefore, we have in our minds this idea that things have value when other people value them. They do not have value in and of themselves. Now we take that idea, which has become so powerful in our lives, and we transport it over to the realm of love. And we say, my love has value only when someone else values it. Otherwise, it has no value. So we seek out others who will value our love. Even parents seek out children who will value their love. Gurus seek out disciples. Disciples seek out gurus who will value each of their love. In other words, we seek out value in ourselves, in our own love, when you say it is valuable. Now, that is not in any absolute sense whatsoever the only reality here. It's a reality we have created in our older age, because it wasn't there in our childhood. And in many people, when they are very old and they're about to die, that concept is not there either. They're just giving love. They're just offering love. Because they are just understanding that they have spent so much of their life trying to find love in others that they were not able to offer it out of their own self. So in their end of life, they're just busy flooding out that love towards others because they just feel so right about doing so. Think about a baby. A baby needs to wear diapers and have the diapers changed. The baby needs to be fed. The baby needs to be bathed by someone else. Yet in old age like this, we wear diapers because we can no longer control these functions. We have to have somebody take care of us. We need to be fed in different ways. We go from one cycle to the other. Can you imagine this? One cycle to the other of dependency to independency to dependency. And when we are dependent, we are helpless. We just offer our love towards those who help us. When we're independent, we are strong and we do not offer our love like that. The dependent child, the dependent old person, offers their love unconditionally to the independent person who is finding meaning in their life, because the love they offer to the child or the old invalid is valued. So we go between two stages of respecting our own love as an entity unto itself, an energy unto itself, which is perfect in all ways. We have these two stages as sandwiches in our lives. And in between, we are seeking out others to value our love. The child finds meaning in love. The old person finds meaning in love because they have no other way to find meaning. The old person's going to die. They offer their love to everyone they know. The child is just dependent and has no other capacities. It offers love to everyone. Here, we have very clear understanding of the meaning of life. It's to offer our love. And in between, we seek out meaning. In between, when we lose that, when we're independent, or striving to be independent, we lose all that meaning because we are seeking out those who need to find value in our love. Therefore, we find meaning in marriage, where the great love arises between two people, between children, the creation of children, where we share with their love. We see God in their faces of love. We take care of older people. We take care of our parents. We do charity work. We take care of people in disasters who are dependent, who need our love, and therefore value it. In other words, if you have the mentality, you can find love and meaning in everything. You can offer your love to the plants, to the trees. They reciprocate. They accept your love. They grow with that love. You can offer your love to other people. Just offer your love. Offer your service. Be of service. Offer your love. Do not expect them to value it. It does not matter. Offer your love to Radhe Shyam. Offer your love to Gaur Nittai. Offer your love to the wonderful divine beings who are there everywhere. Just offer your love, because that's where there is meaning, when you offer your love and when you wish to be of service. Even if you were to sit in one place and simply emanate oceans of love, you are of the greatest service to the whole world, which is starving for love. Who's a better person? One who walks in a room of pain and tells everybody how they can feel love, or one who walks in a room of pain and just floods it with one's own love that everyone can feel? Obviously, the experience of love is so much more important than just the words of it, especially when those words are combined with some kind of dogma or fundamentalism or some kind of insistence that you know better for that person knows for themselves. And love and service can manifest in all kinds of ways. There is no box or formula or law or regulation that says love has to manifest like this. Love can manifest in ways which seem to be contrary to normal understanding. Here's an example. Let's say a child blames a mother for something bad that happened to him. Another person comes along, takes the blame on behalf of the mother, says that it was their fault, just so the child can reconnect to the mother. The mother was actually guilty. The person taking the blame is innocent. So they are lying, and yet they are doing it out of service to bring mother and child back together again, the natural condition of love. And that mother is so grateful to that service, which breaks the laws of truthfulness or breaks the laws of so-called fairness or justice, because it is just such a beautiful selflessness for the sake of another. And that child will hate that person, will condemn that person, will even work against that person, but it'll be wrong. Yet there's a sublime correctness to that sacrifice. Love is a garden. It's a complex arrangement of plants which work well with each other and battling against weeds and fertilizing the garden and watering it properly and making sure that no harm comes to it. It's protected from storms and animals and too much sun or not enough sun. It's work. It's a cultivation. And like any proper gardener in any proper gardening situation, knowledge of how plants thrive is essential for making a good garden. These talks we have, these broadcasts we have, the whole point is to increase our knowledge of how to cultivate our own love and cultivate that love in our offering of service to others in the creation of the garden of love. So we want to offer that love. We want to offer that love yet in a way which is compatible with others. Let's say you're just some crazy person who just walks down the street loving others yet walk over them or smash into them because you're totally unaware, you're just so full of love. What is that? Let's say you're some person who is a little bit crazy and walking down the street and just throwing love everywhere. Throwing love everywhere. I love. Yet walking with the hands in the air, bashing into people, smashing into them, or stepping on their feet. What kind of love is this? Love requires some knowledge. Love requires awareness of others. Love requires compassion towards others. Love requires that our requirements or our needs or our desires are in consideration with those of others, that we don't stand alone, we stand with others. And in that reciprocation, if a harsh word is needed to save somebody out of love, it is perfectly within context. If a soft word is needed or no word is needed, sometimes the best thing to say is nothing and just offer your loving energy. Sometimes people are just frustrated and they just need to be accepted. They just need to be accepted, emotionally hugged, or even physically hugged. In our garden of love, whatever the plants require, this is our meaning. This is our purpose in life to cultivate. When we depart from this life and we move to the next plane, the judgment that takes place is mainly within ourselves, and the way we judge ourselves is how much I loved. And we condemn ourselves for our selfishness, for our lack of concern, for our blindness, for our lack of compassion towards others. And when we have this understanding, when we have this mood of cultivating as a gardener, when we see it as our responsibility of our life, it flourishes. Look, if you're a gardener, and let's say you live in Moscow, where it gets very cold in the winter, and you plant an orange tree. Now, that's not very smart, is it? It will grow fine in the spring, in the summer, maybe a little bit in the fall, but when that frost comes, it's dead. A good gardener does not plant that which cannot grow in its garden. A good gardener understands that one has to have knowledge of cultivation. One has to do things according to the rules of the world. Although I'm not against miracles, it's not very practical to say that love conquers all, love can make everything work, love can make oranges grow in Moscow. Now listen, miracles are possible. Greenhouses are also possible. However, if you really want to succeed in cultivating your garden of love, you have to follow the rules of the plants, of the earth, of the fertilizer, of the atmosphere, of the temperature, of the climate. And above all, it's work. It's work. It's commitment. You can't just leave your garden and let it be and then forget about it. You can't just say, okay, I've planted everything, it's all nicely planted, it's growing. I can walk away and go on vacation for 5 weeks and come back, it'll be fine. If you commit to yourself, if you accept yourself, if you accept your love, then you commit to the responsibility to maintain, to cultivate again, to work at it continuously, to make it flourish. That's what spiritual life is about. That's what spirituality is all about. That's what service is all about. Maintaining, cultivating, keeping things organically growing and proper. So love is complex. Although it's born from us, and all that really counts is the way we manifest it, still, we have to have knowledge on how to properly manifest it in a way that is compatible with, acceptable to, and has some value for others. And ultimately, that's all that counts. That's our meaning in life. That's our value in life. It doesn't really matter if other people value it now. That does not give it value. It is simply an offering. And if someone accepts it, wonderful. If not, what can you do? Therefore, if you want to remain sane in this world, you may offer selflessly, yet learn the art of detachment. Because only by learning the art of detachment, you will understand that your love does not diminish in value if someone else does not value it. And ultimately, love conquers all, because ultimately, your love will be what remains. And all of these ideas or memories or histories, these things will not matter, because what counts between people is the love that was exchanged. And as far as I can see, this is the principle for meaning in life. Love is meaning. So I want to stop here and take a break and then resume again at 10 minutes to the hour. Now it's 27 minutes after the hour. I'll start again at 10 minutes of the hour with questions. I already have one question. You can email me more, instant message me more. I'd also like to say that next Saturday we will not have a broadcast. And if you feel like making donations, please do so. We are dependent on your donations, even in Russia. There are different ways to give donations in Russia as there are outside of Russia. You can find us all in the particular language site on HariMedia.net under donations. And again, not a broadcast next Saturday, but the next week after, you can spread the word also. Okay, we're going to have a break now. I'll play some music. See you at 10 minutes of the hour. I have a question. This question is about the pain that comes from love. And it specifically is, not everyone is ready to open one's heart to love due to the danger of the pain that one gets along with it. For example, about worrying about the one you love or something else. This is, of course, the main consideration that everybody speaks about. This consideration is based on fear. And anything which is based on fear is a problem, because there's either love or there's fear. Yet, at the same time, fear for the loved one is also part of love, and it's not exactly the same thing as this fear. So, the fear of harm coming to one that you love, the fear of pain coming to the one you love, this is naturally part of the service that you are doing for an other by trying to support them, trying to protect them, trying to help them. It's part of the service of love. Hello? Hello? Ma? Okay, did you translate that? What happened? You didn't hear me? I didn't hear you because probably the volume control was turned down on my headphones, not because you didn't speak. So you did translate it, right? Okay. So, service doesn't always mean, like, for example, giving people ice cream and cake. It also means to help them in situations which are dangerous, situations which are fearful. For example, if somebody's falling, to come and grab them and catch them. Or if somebody's being attacked by someone else, to place your life in danger to save them. But to say that I shall not love because I shall avoid all pain is to also say I shall avoid all that pleasure. So you have a choice. You can either skip all pain and all pleasure, or you can take the pleasure and the pain. Those who skip all pain and pleasure basically don't feel. Those who feel pleasure and pain feel the intensity of the experience of life. Some people need to not feel for a while. It's a healing space for them. It's not that we can say not feeling is bad and feeling is good. And some people just can't handle feelings. So it depends on the time. It depends on your needs. It depends on what you can handle. It depends on what you're capable of. And in some cases, the pain is insignificant compared to the pleasure. Just take, for example, childbirth. Nobody can, no male, for instance, has the faintest idea in the world of the trouble women go through when they give birth to children. Yet, even though a woman may have already had a child, that doesn't stop her from having another. Even though the pain is enormous, the difficulty, the stress, the trouble is difficult, they accept it because of the pleasure. So, one has to consider in one's life, shall I be detached totally without any concern? Or shall I be diving into the experience of life and tasting it, churning it, churning that energy, churning that experience? Somebody's written to me about the gopis' pain. Well, that pain is there for anybody in the spiritual sky who's got that intensity of love. When you get to the point where the intensity of your love is so massive, so enormously dense intensity of love, the capacity to be hurt increases exponentially. But at the same time, they don't say, we are not interested in suffering like this. Of course they do say it, but it doesn't work. We'll just forget all about this Krishna because he doesn't care about us. Let's talk about Radha just for a second. Radha is pure love, just offering that love. And for her, that's her entire reward. The gopis, they're filled with being very satisfied with their own love, that they have such love for Krishna and for Radha. And the attainment of reciprocation or the lack of reciprocation does not diminish their own love. So they are the perfect examples of those who know how to appreciate their own love. And therefore, one can understand very well the gopis feeling quite comfortable with observing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna because they are just manifesting their own personal love as gopis. They don't need, need is the wrong word. They don't insist on the reciprocation in that way. This is quite a problem, a situation which is very hard to imagine for those who don't have this experience of love. Yet, for those who have this enormous capacity to manifest this wonderful love as the gopis or as Radha has, for them such pain or such selflessness or such absorption in their own love is a great reward in and of itself. I have a question here that I think everyone would love someone who would value the love, but it seems that people haven't a choice. In other words, you don't know who's going to value it or not. People love or they don't love. Could you say something about this? And I would answer that in the same way I've answered the lecture, so I'm not exactly sure if I understood the question. That people love you or they don't love you. You don't really have much choice about that. And therefore, this may act as a deterrent or an encouragement for us to love others. But the point of what I was saying in the lecture was that you should not love just because someone else will love you. You should love as cultivating your garden of love, and you try your best, whether someone else reciprocates with you or not, is not really your goal. Your goal is to love and to be of service. But that's easy to say, especially for me, sitting here. What you do or you don't do is up to your realization and what your capacity is. And therefore, we can't really judge how an individual will manifest their love or not. All we can do is encourage that manifestation of love without a fruitive desire. Basically, that's the answer. But we could spend just this moment, we could just spend some moments just offering our love to everybody around the world. You don't really need me to lead you through it. You can just make a connection to all the others who are listening now, who are connected now, and offer your love to them all over the world, and just feel that connection. That's all that really I can offer at this point. So let us just make that connection, offer that connection to everybody who is connected with us now, and let us just feel our love for them in a very pure and a very detached, without any expectation of return manner. So we can start off by just making the connection to everybody. And then when we feel the connection, to offer our love